That's it, yeah. The last 2 days I tried to get a little bit a distance between, and it's good. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'm attached again. So, yeah. But then I know, oh, I made a mistake. Now I'm attached again, and I'm suffering. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have to practice, to train it, or I don't know, or to do it all the time, and maybe it's getting better and better. So.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, you have to detach. Huh? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's difficult, especially, you know, if the body is not working. If the body really feels, if there's really a feeling, you know, where it can't do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, when high fever, when all these three conditions, normally one, you know, I just don't care. But when all three come together, you know, okay, it is rather painful.
It's
seems often that suffering is subliminal. It's easy to recognize when the body is suffering.
Yeah.
But when it's beneath your conscious mind and it operates your body and mind.
I mean, there are two kinds of suffering. There's the suffering that is connected with our body. I mean, these are all things that we created. And loneliness is the most terrible thing. I mean, we just can't stand it. And that's why we need somebody so close to us. And that is not only the cure. I mean, we are separate from ourselves until we find unification. What is unification? Unification happens within the heart. I mean, once we get one point, I mean, there is nothing that we need. There's no feeling of loneliness. So once we get into upachara samadhi, we don't feel lonely, we don't feel worried. The moment we get out, you know, we feel lonely, we feel separated. We want this and we want that. I mean, isn't that strange? The moment we touch samadhi, you know, there's nothing that we need at that moment. The moment we get out of samadhi, everything, we need this and we need that, we are not satisfied with this and we are not satisfied with that. So that's all the voices of the kilesas coming up the moment we get out of samadhi. I want this. I don't like this. I want that. I don't like that. Get me this. Don't get me that. I want to be healthy. I want to be young, and so on, and so on. And then we go back into samadhi and everything disappears. All this wanting disappears. The wanting is created by the kilesa, by avijja. And that what is creating dukkha. I mean, if we're sick and we don't want to get healthy, you know, then where's the dukkha? There's no dukkha. If we're lonely, if we don't want to get a partner, there's no dukkha. But the moment we want to get a partner and we don't find one, you know, then there's a lot of dukkha. And then we settle for the second or third best, you know, and there's more dukkha. Dukkha comes with the attachment of not liking what is here at the present moment. If you would like everything what is happening right now, you know, there wouldn't be any dukkha. If you just could accept the things as they are. I mean, we are going through changes constantly. The environment is going through changes. The world is going through changes constantly. But we don't accept it, because we have an idea of how the world should run. It should run our way. And if it doesn't run our way, there's dukkha. If it happens to run for a moment or for two moments our way, then there's sukha, the opposite of dukkha. then there's happiness. Ah, see, you know, I got it. But it just happened to be that way. It had nothing to do with our doings. But we always believe we could make it happen. So in the next time we do the same thing and it just doesn't happen, then our dukkha is even greater. We remember that moment we had a lot of happiness. So we try to recreate that moment and there's no happiness. So it has nothing to do with this moment or this situation or that situation. At that moment where we had this happiness, we were just unified with the experience itself. We just didn't want anything. And that is the only thing that brings us to happiness. And that is the way of samadhi. Just putting our concentration onto one point. Either the breath or the word, the repetition of Buddha or Dhamma or Sangha or whatever. I mean, it makes us happy. That's all what we need for happiness. And what are we doing in this world for our happiness? We move mountains. We revolt against the government or against our management or whatever, or about against our partner. And why all this? Why all this? Why all these complications? Why all these fights? Because we can't accept the way it is. That's why we have a fight. And it's so subtle, we don't even realize. I mean, we built our whole worldview not just only in one moment. I mean, it has been programmed for a long, long time. And each time we read a new story or hear a new book or hear a new story, I mean, our own life story will increase. Because this idea is good, or that idea is good, so we build it into our dreams. So actually our life is nothing else than daydream. We just don't know what is going on. In the moment we feel the reality is coming onto us, you know, wow. How could this happen? I mean, everything just happens right now. And just look at it, you know, and then there's no problem.
But when I say this, okay? Then this is maybe another idea, so then I have the idea to accept all what's going on, or?
Well, that's a good idea.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, it leads you from...
It sounds so easy.
Yeah. I mean, that is the... It's part of the success of positive thinking, this idea. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't go to the same depth. Positive thinking was created, you know, for giving the people, you know, some sort of, you know, dealing with difficult situations. But for us, you know, positive thinking in this sense, you know, or not thinking at all, I mean, leads us to the basic function or the basic nature of our own citta. I mean, once you come up, back out, you know, you can deal much more better with these situations. Because you're more objective. Don't even think about it. But it is so difficult to get the mind centered on one point. That's why we do all these other things. I mean, we settle for the 10th best choice. We don't settle for the best choice. Because it's so difficult. I mean, what do the people do? You know, they go to school and see they can't finish it. You know, and then, I mean, they settle for nothing. I mean the way the way of practice, as I mentioned it before, is the way of Sila, Samadhi and Panya. Is the way of keeping the five precepts. When developing Samadhi, I mean, if you can't keep the five precepts, then it's pretty much useless, you know, to develop Samadhi and Panya. Wisdom. So, we keep the five precepts. Then we try, or we force, in the beginning we force our mind not to go away from our object of concentration until the mind becomes quiet. I mean, it takes all our effort. If we are not willing to give in, if we are not willing to give our best, I mean, we won't receive the best. We receive as much as we give. If we do it wholeheartedly, we get wholehearted results. If we do it half-heartedly, we get half-hearted results. But most of us do it just 10%. So we get only 10% of this. Because 90% of the other time we're thinking about this and thinking about that while we do our book. Oh, this thought is still interesting. Oh, this memory was great. And that's how it works. But we should not forget, Samadhi is only one thing. Samadhi is giving us a break. I mean, it's just like sleep. It's giving us some rest and power and energy. I mean, the moment the body is rested, it has much more energy. And this kind of energy we use to investigate why are we attached to the things we are. To lift our attachment. So we investigate the things that we are attached to. And we are attached to the five khanda. And the first khanda we have to investigate is the body. Inside, outside, upside down. From top to bottom, from bottom to top. From inside to outside, from outside to inside. In detail or across. No matter what. And with the body comes the six senses. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. And we are attached to all these things. I mean, we wouldn't care about this body if it didn't have the six senses. I mean, we wouldn't feed anything that is so useless and so full of shit if it wouldn't give us some sort of senses. I mean, if you're blind and deaf and cannot speak and cannot smell and taste, you know, what's the use of having this body? So we accept this mess of the body only because it gives us the six senses. So we never think about this mess, that we constantly have to keep up. Huh? We constantly have to move, we constantly have to feed, we constantly have to relieve it of its shit. Why are you doing this? Why do you walk along, you know, and take 50 or 60 kilos with you? I mean, it's heavy. You have to move all this flesh and blood and shit. Wherever you go, you have to move it to. So there's this kind of attachment we have to break. First we have to see the disgusting nature of the body. And with this disgusting nature, you know, we get the senses more objective. I mean, if we close our eyes, there's still experience, isn't there? I mean, we have to level it down. We have to compare it with something that we do not know yet. So that's why we need to go into Samadhi. To be able to compare it with what we cannot experience in this world. When we see they are made of the same sort of things, but they are much more cleaner and clearer. The pity that we enjoy or the joy that we get in Samadhi is much finer, much clearer than the joy that we get anywhere, that we can find anywhere within this world. the peacefulness is much clearer and much refined than we can find anything in this world. So we have to use it, compare it, and not only one time, each time. And of course, if we can't, then we are in trouble. Then this world will always be luring around us, always tempting us. Isn't it? I mean, if I eat something nice that what I like, you know, that is always a nice, you know, it's a nice taste, it's a pleasant taste. That's fine. If I hear music that is pleasant to me, you know, then I have some comfortable feeling, some pleasant feeling.
But is this okay? Or do you think it's not okay?
Of course it is okay.
But it's attached. You are attached a little bit.
Of course you're attached, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, all these senses are okay. And the Lord Buddha even teaches us, if there wouldn't be anything that is more refined and more enjoyable than the world can offer, nobody would go this way. What? But in order to go this way and to entrust ourselves in the way of the Lord Buddha, you know, we first have to have some faith into him and believe that what he says, and then test it out for ourselves until we find it. And then we can see it for ourselves. And once we can see it for ourselves, it's easier to detach from this world. Because we know everything arises in the heart. In the moment we go into the heart, all the worries, all the unhappiness disappears. I mean, it disappears, the unhappiness, the moment you enter Upachara Samadhi. And everything disappears when you enter Apana Samadhi. Everything. I mean, including your body. You are light as a feather. And the feather is heavy in that. So why are you not willing to go there? Why do you still believe your dreams? And you see them, how they are made up, constantly made up. I mean, even about a blunt environment like this, you still have dreams. You want this and you want that. Isn't it constantly popping up in your mind? They say most of the time. I mean, if something is popping up, you can allow one thing to pop up. I want to practice, I want to practice, I want to practice. I want to understand. What the hell is going on? I want to understand what is going on. Who is fooling me? Who is telling me what to like and what not to like? Who is telling me? And that makes, you know, heaven and hell. Like is heaven and dislike is hell. I mean, the hell is created by us and we go there. As long as we believe there is heaven and hell, that's where we go. If you can cross heaven and hell, there is no heaven and hell anymore. That means if you can go through greed and hate, there is no heaven and there is no hell. And greed and hate is likes and dislikes. And that creates this universe. I mean, if there is one thing, then there must be the opposite of it. And as long as we believe in these opposites, you know, we are bound to these opposites. As long as we believe there is good, you know, then there has to be bad. As long as we believe there is bad, then there must be good. In whatever path we chose, you know, we go for the good or we go for the bad. Or we go for our likes and we avoid our dislikes. Do you know why these chickens are there? They know they are going to be recorded. all of the time, you know, I wasn't recording, you know, they were quiet. Now they know they are going to be recorded, so that's why they make a hell of a noise.
Likes and dislikes.
Yes.
That's the key.
Yes. And the first thing is the body.
That means to say the body is not like and it's not dislike or what is it?
No. I mean to overcome the body and to overcome the senses, to overcome greed and hate, is to understand the true nature of the body. As I said, you know, last time I gave this example about the shit, you know, this joke.
Uh-huh.
Where these two friends were walking by and one said, careful, you don't step in this shit, yeah? And this one person was a little bit, you know, stubborn. And he said, I don't believe that it's shit, you know. So he feels it, and then it feels like shit, you know, and then he smells it, and it smells like shit, and then he eats it, and it is like shit, huh? I mean, the other person just goes, this is shit, you know, and goes past by.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he sees, he goes past by, he never knows what shit is.
Mm-hmm. So you have to know what shit is.
You have to know your body. So investigation, going beyond greed, is investigation of the body, you know, to see all this. I mean, do you like blood? You know, if it's in front of you, fresh blood? I mean, some of us really faint the first time, you know, they see real blood coming out. Or, you know, if you have a wound, you know, if half of your body or your leg is sliced open, you know, you faint. Why do you faint? Because it really contradicts your idea about the body. I mean, the moment we open our body, we see how it is made of. Out of all disgusting elements. I mean, what is there that is not disgusting within our body? Look at the food that is just right now digesting in there. I mean, it's still valuable food. Would you eat it again?
No.
No. Of course not. Or when it's processed to shit, you know, do you like to look at the shit that comes out of the body? Put it in your hands and smell it? I mean, it's still body. It just left the body, you know. Before you liked it, as long as it's in this body, you like it. The moment it comes out, you don't like it. Why?
It smells bad.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, just smell your sweat. Does it smell good?
No.
Smell your shirts that you're in touch with this body. Feel the grease of the hair. Does it feel good? It constantly comes out of this body.
No.
I mean, whatever goes into the body is nice. Whatever comes out of the body is really disgusting. Of disgusting nature. So it's actually a factory that... puts everything that is nice and beautiful into something that is ugly and disgusting. A transformer of a transforming factory. And I said, you know, before I said, you know, we just take up with it because it gives us this acceptance. But now we have to really understand what the nature of the body is like. I mean, see it, you know, pull off your skin and see it, yeah? I mean, the next time you look in the mirror, say hello, you know, and then pull off your skin. And you don't want to see that. So why is it that, why don't you want to see reality? I mean, that is real. I mean, under your skin, everything is real, it is working. I mean, the brain is still functioning, and the nerve system is still functioning, everything is still functioning. I mean, just a tissue, thin skin, hides the truth from us and deludes us into thinking this is something very nice and pleasant. How can this be? You know, pull it off. Slice your body up and see it. Just thinking of us, just thinking doesn't help. We have to see, we have to experience it. I mean, once the disgust comes up, then we know we do a body investigation right. If it's just playing the thoughts or images or imagination, you know, then we don't do it right. But the moment, some very uncomfortable feeling, and if you do it for a long time, you know, really anger comes up. And who produces this anger? Produces by the kilesas. Because they don't want to see this body as it is. They don't want to see reality. Why do you want to stop?
Also, hi. If anger arises in this contemplation, how should we handle?
Well, deal with anger. See how it is. I mean, anger is always fire.
Yeah, it's both fire.
Yeah. It's a ball of fire, eh? It can be slow, it can be a small ball, it can be a big ball. I mean, that's the whole investigation of the body, or the whole purpose, is to bring up unpleasant feelings. I mean, I said it quite often, if we don't swim through the fires of hell, we will not overcome hell. If we don't go through the pain of unpleasant feelings, we will not be able to overcome unpleasant feelings. If we don't swim through the fire of dukkha, we will not be able to overcome dukkha. There's no way. We have to understand dukkha. It's not that we have to suffer it. We have to understand who is causing it. And if you're a little bit clever and intelligent, then you just remember what I said, you know, who is causing this suffering? The kilesas. Because they don't want to see reality. They just don't want to see, they want to live in the illusions.
Always these kilesas.
Yes, and that is why you're here, because of the kilesas. That's why you're born, and that's why you're dying, and that's why you're born again, because they want to have another car. And another car. I mean, next life they all wish to have a Mercedes or a Rolls Royce. And some of them don't get any car.
Maybe a bicycle.
Because their karma is not good. They didn't save enough money. And if you don't save enough money, we don't get a good car. Or we can't afford a car at all. That means we have to go down to hell. And money and karma is very closely related. If we produce a lot of good karma, we will get a good car. If we produce a lot of bad karma, you know, we go down to hell. We have no choice. I mean, it's very logical. I mean, everything that we do in this world is very closely related to the law of karma. Mm-hmm. All the examples we use can be related to karma. Whatever we do, you know, will have an effect. Eh? I mean, each farmer knows it. I mean, if he seeds potatoes, he will reap potatoes and not, you know, strawberries and fruits or this or that. I mean, he will get potatoes. The law is very simple.
Yep.
Jesus said it as well. You know, what you reap is that what you get. But you know, we saw anger and we want to reap love. I mean, how is that working? It can't work, you know. I mean, a farmer is a smarter person. He knows he can't get it. Because he hasn't sown it. But we forgot it, what we have sown in the past. And that's why we're angry about what we are getting. Or surprised, you know, sometimes if it's good, you know, we're surprised. And somebody wins in the lottery. That's no chance, that's no luck. It's karma. Everything is karma. Whatever we experience just right now, at this very moment, is karma. It's the result of our past actions. If you remember them or not, it doesn't matter. It's the result. And the only hope is that we are, from this moment on, where we are aware of these things, is that we only produce things that we want to reap. I mean, we have these things in mostly all languages. Don't do unto others what you don't want others to do unto you. But do we follow it? No.
Well, sometimes, most.
Yeah, be very careful. Be very careful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
I mean, about your thinking. Be very careful, right? I mean, you do a lot of things just because out of anger. Just because you are hurt, just because you, and you don't know that you're doing it. Just like a drunk person or an unmindful person. The moment you're unmindful, you actually don't know what you're doing. The moment you're aware of what you're doing and why you're doing this, that's, I mean, where that it creeps in. That's where you're actually in control. And how often during the day are you in control? I mean, in the world. Here it's much more. How often are you in control? I mean, you go shopping, you don't get what you want, and you already get angry. And then somebody comes, you know, and rambles you, and then you get really angry. And you get pissed. I mean, it just happens every day. In our worldly life, doesn't it? And that's how we create bad karma. We don't see things happening, you know, we just react. Just like animals react. We don't think about it. Before we do and before we speak, we don't think. If we would think, you know, is that good what I say? I mean, if that is before every kind of action, if that is a good intention what I do, or if it's a good intention what I say, I mean, we wouldn't be into problems at all. Is this kind of word what I want to hear from the others? Huh? Huh? Is that a kind of action what I want to come back from others? If we would be aware of this, you know, all the time, if we wouldn't have any problems in this whole world. But we never ask ourselves, because we act from our ideas and opinions, this is how it is, has to be done. Because other people tell us, and we, through our own experience, we think this is the way it should be. And then we are forced into a situation where our ideas are enforced upon us. And then how do we react? Are we happy? No. Just the opposite. We are very unhappy. Because we actually feel that nobody is listening to us. Because we have never ever listened to others. That can be in any kind of situation. It can be a situation when we are in front of our students, or when we are when we are together with our partner. Well, you know, in working conditions. I mean, so many things happen within a minute, huh? Are we aware of it? Are you aware of it? You really think that you're doing it? That you really consider every time? I doubt it. I mean, I really doubt it. You really have to be amazingly. I mean, you have to have a sati that is greater than 50%. before you actually are aware of the things that are going on. Otherwise you are not. It has to reach to the stage where you actually know when you are not aware. And then you can change it. But before that you have to get there. You have to put all your effort and all your means into this, getting the mind centered, one point. That's all what you want to need to do at this very moment. And once you get centered very easily, then you start with the investigation of the body. I mean, first of all, you know, we have to see that this body has nothing to do with us. I mean, we are born into this body and we die with this body. But something is going on. I mean, when you are born in a car and die in the car, you know, you cannot distinguish that you are not the car. Isn't it? You are born from the first moment of your life, you know, you are sitting in a car, driving it. I mean, until the car crashes. And then of course you believe that you are the car. Listen, it's very logical. Until you learn to step out. And then you see, the car and the driver are two different things. So it is with the citta and the body. They're two different things. I mean, the citta exists all the time. The body has just a variance of 40 to 80 years at this time. For an animal, it can be different.
But the citta is not me either, or? Or is it? So,
then you are really in trouble. If you say that the citta is not you. I mean, what is you?
Yeah, that's always my question. I don't know. I'm looking for me, but I can't find it.
I mean, there is no personality. As long as we say, you know, this... We say car and the driver, you know, the citta and the body.
Yeah.
You know, this citta has a personality like every driver has a personality. One is a reckless driver and the other one is a Sunday driver. Huh? Mm-hmm. I mean, all variations in between.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go down, that is the citta. As long as there is a citta, there is a defiled citta, then you have a personality. I mean, just look at the water, you know, if the water is in one pot, you know, the drops of the water don't have any personality because they are all melted into one. But as long as there are rain, each drop of the rain, each drop of water has a different personality. And as long as you're falling, you know, you have a different personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see yourself as different from the other drops. And as long as we are defiled, as long as we have a avijja ruling, we see ourselves different. Then we don't know what we are. We are water. We are not the drops. That is our true self. But you know, the self is gone because the water is water. There is no personality in this. I mean, if you understand that correctly, you know, you will know what is it. And the citta, you know, the moment you eradicate avijja from the citta, that's what is left. But if you think you're not the citta, then you're really into trouble. I mean, that is the closest that we get at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still the defiled citta, it's still it's the personalized citta, it's still the water drop. It's not yet, we cannot see the water because of the form.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We cannot feel the essence because we only see the form of the water drop.
Mm-hmm.
And the form of the water drop is nothing else than avijja. Once avijja is removed, there is no form. We see the essence. I mean, you can experience the essence. The moment you go into apanasamadhi, that's where you really experience the essence of the citta. Because the form has dropped. When the form has dropped, the universe does not exist at this very moment. Your body does not exist, the universe does not exist. I mean, get to know it for yourself, I mean, all what you need to do is just focus on this one point. And whatever holds you back are the kilesas. I mean, they're ruling you.
Mm.
I mean, get up, stand up for your rights, huh? Was in the 70s, was a very nice thing, huh? But you're too lazy because it's too difficult. Become your own. I mean, it's up to you. There's nothing holding you back except the kilesas. They don't want you to go there. And they produce all sorts of reasoning. They tell you all sorts of things why we can't do this. Why it is so difficult. I mean, they are the only ones who create worries and difficulties and problems. They are the ones who create this. And we believe it. You're so stupid to believe them. I mean, they say this is a problem. We cannot go further on. And we believe it. And we are fooled. If you wouldn't believe it and just go on, you know the things will just diminish. Because all the things are created illusions. The moment we don't believe it, the illusion disappears. And the problem disappears with it. And that is what we have to experience. I mean, the first time you experience, you feel, I mean, that's amazing, huh? You really feel amazing, huh? But the second time, you have to do it, you know, quite often until you really understand, you know, there's nothing behind this. You just produce, you know, in front of your eyes, you know, and it's a nice screen. I mean, very colorful pictures and movies are running down your inner screen. And you believe these pictures, huh? Now look at a picture, what is it made out of? Next time go into your computer, you know, and assemble it, you know, and then you see only a green spot, a red spot, or a blue spot. And how many illusions can you create from three colors? I mean, it's amazing. Now just look at your TV, there are three colors coming in, and what is coming out? I mean, it's amazing. It can be a horror movie, it can be a love story, it can be a news.
So
I don't know, whatever it is, yeah? Whatever you like, that's what you see.
Yeah.
And now think about our reality, you know, that has five components. The body, feeling, memory, and association, thought, and consciousness. I mean, what can they... I mean, they create amazing things. Just a combination of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what our practice of investigation is to put them back, you know, into the basic building blocks. I mean, this is body, this is memory, this is thought, this is body, this is feeling, this is memory, this is body, this is feeling. Or there's body, there's feeling, there's memory, there's body, there's feeling, there's memory. And I mean, you won't get into any troubles at all. If you just break it down like this, huh? I mean, the problems cannot arise. But if you let feelings and memory and thought work together, then immediately you have a problem. I mean, they combine themselves and build them up like an avalanche. I mean, it hits you. Certainly has to hit you. Because you let it create. So you have to fight for your rights. I mean, they don't give anything for free. Don't even think this. Don't even think that you can persuade the kilesas to give you up. It's part of the kilesas that try to persuade themselves. But it's not working. The only way is to fight. Fight one way for freedom, yeah.
Is it easier to approach the problem through the kilesas, the attraction aversion syndrome, these come from the sense of individual selfhood.
Yes.
Can you approach it that way also, through the sense to eliminate that as
Not really. It helps you at the beginning, you know, to put it objective. Okay, there is something out there, you know, just let me see what it is. I mean, if you just make a new idea, you know, you get some, sooner or later you will get into other troubles. I mean, we cannot fight ideas with new ideas. We can fight the ideas to bring them down back to reality. What is it made out of? That's how investigation is done. But of course, you know, to use the principles of anatta, that is not me, that is not mine, that does not belong to me. Whatever I see, whatever I experience, whatever there is memory, this is not me, that doesn't belong to me, this is not myself. I mean, that brings it in distance so we can look at it. I mean, each picture that is close to our eyes, you know, we just can't see it. The moment we put it off, then we see that it's something different from us. Right? I mean, it's a help in the beginning, but you don't get stuck there. I mean, we love, you know, because it's much easier than this hard work. Yeah? We just love to get new ideas. Oh, it's not myself that is doing this. You know, killing a person, that is not myself, you know. We just go ahead and kill this person or rob this person. I mean, that brings us actually into big troubles. You understand? So bring this, you know, everything that you're thinking about, bring it down. What is it? Is it body? Is it feeling? Is it memory? Is it thought? Or if it's consciousness? And then whatever closely matches, you know, then put it. Okay, there was consciousness, or there was thought, or there was memory. Consciousness is just, you know, a signal that comes into our sense data. Just receiving something, not even knowing what it is. Huh?
For me is the question always, who is saying this? That's a feeling, or that... Maybe that's the Kilesas too, I don't know. Or,
yes.
Huh?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so I'm fooling myself, or...
No.
No.
Okay. We have to use the Kilesas to get rid of the Kilesas.
Maybe it's a part of the Kilesas, or...
I mean... All our intelligence
is
the Kilesa.
Yeah, so I know.
So we have to use the intelligence in the right way to undermine the power of the Kilesas. The power of the Kilesas is an illusion. And we go going back to reality, you know, that is undermining the power. I mean, the tools will be still there.
Yeah.
I mean, the tools are neutral. They are not part of the Kilesas. They are not the Kilesas. But they are used, you know, like your toolbox, you know. Either your kid is using the toolbox, or your friend is using the toolbox, and you don't have the tools ready. I mean, you get angry. So most of our tools, and these five tools, the five khandhas are the five tools, are used by the Kilesas, or are used by the Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot actually say that
these... Okay, say that it's the Dhamma. So it will help me. So when I say it's the Kilesas, so I'm fooling myself. So
it's difficult to distinguish in the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, because we cannot distinguish that these tools are tools.
Yeah.
So in the beginning we see only memory, you know. If it's a good memory, then we do follow this good memory.
Yeah.
That's what we do in the beginning, you know. If it leads us in the right direction, then it's okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even think about, you know, if it's a Kilesas or not the Kilesas.
Yeah. Okay.
If it leads us in the wrong direction.
Moment, yeah.
But, you know, whatever leads us to good, you know, is also Kilesa.
I know, so that is...
But, you know, at least it's going to good, you know, to being in the good direction.
Yeah.
Until we really can distinguish, you know, that there is some difference, that there are actually tools. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't remember, but I think, you know, that it is a very difficult point, you know. Who are we, eh?
Yeah.
Get down in Apana Samadhi and then you know who you are. And then you know what the Kilesas are and not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not easy, eh?
Yeah.
So in the beginning we have to trust, you know, just to follow a path, you know, that leads to good. I mean, we have to get the tools back. And the Dhamma has to get the tools back. I mean, at the moment, the killers are just trying to create a new dimension, how to stop you. I said, all this work, oh, I'm fooling myself, you know, so what's the point?
Yeah, sure.
What's the point of doing this work if I'm just fooling myself?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if I fool myself in this way or that way.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, they are clever. They're finding any kind of weakness within you, and they know you better than you.
So it doesn't matter who it is. It has to work and to fit to.
I mean, Buddha.
To the good.
Buddha will, you know, if you remain your concentration on Buddha, it will lead you to happiness and peacefulness.
Mm-hmm. So
I mean, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Okay.
If it leads you to restlessness and anger, you know, that's not good. Except if you do investigation. If it leads you to anger, then this is good.
Mm-hmm.
But that is only the second stage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to bring up this anger. To be able to deal with anger. I mean, anger can be in all sorts of forms. Restlessness is the slowest, is the most subtle form of anger. I mean, just disagreeing is anger. Strongly disagreeing, you know, and being outraged, you know, it's all forms of anger. And we have to learn how to deal with them properly. Once we learn, you know, it's easier to deal with anger than it's to deal with lust, with greed. Because greed always promises something very pleasant, so we never investigate. But anger always brings us something unpleasant, so we are much more likely to investigate. And to get beyond greed and hate is to bring anger and greed into balance. And our scale is way out of balance. I mean, all our life we have followed the pleasant things. Nobody of us, you know, went into a situation that made us really angry or displeasant. We all avoided them. And now we are taking the opportunity to deal with anger, to look up these unpleasant things. Just in order to bring our balance, bring a balance to greed and hate. I mean, it's just like a scale. The moment the scale of greed and hate is equal, I mean, we can just walk through the middle. And that is the end of greed and hate. But if you don't bring it up to the balance, you know, you will never be able to walk through, because it's out of balance. It has to be completely balanced.
What do you mean with balance?
I mean, just think of it. I mean, all the time you want something, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All the time you're looking for pleasant things. So, I mean, it is way out of balance.
That's right, yeah.
But I'll let you know more about this another time. It's more to it. So, are there any more questions?
Mentioned the khandhas.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's easy to see how the senses give the feelings, give into the concepts, things, and even the formula of reaction of you see something red, you interpret it as apple, and so you react to grab an apple. Mm. In the Samkhya philosophy, they go on to say that the formulative process is what gives rise to consciousness, one gives rise to another. I don't understand how that part of it works.
Explain it one more time. What gives rise to consciousness?
How the senses give rise to the feelings, give rise to the memory.
Mm-hmm.
Which gives rise to the formulative thing. How does that, the skanda, how does that give rise to consciousness itself?
If there wouldn't be consciousness, you wouldn't be feeling anything.
Mm.
So consciousness comes before that. So what is actually, no, it's actually, you got it the wrong way. When you look at how the Lord Buddha describes it, the navicha, this is a condition for all phenomena to arise. All phenomena. I mean, the world including everything. And the phenomena are the condition for consciousness to arise. And consciousness is the condition for meaning. So for nama rupa, for meaning and form to arise. And meaning and form is the condition for feelings to arise. And then, I mean, we don't get the first part of it, you know, we are left, whatever we see is, you know, it's already working, you know, it's working in fast time, you know, we don't see it how it works. That's why we are fooled, you know, we are fooled by our own science, how things are working. I mean, we don't see form. I mean, there are some senses, there are some sense contact, that's what we do. Then we make out a form and we make out a color. And from this color and this form, we conclude, and that is a function of memory, to conclude this is an apple. Or it can be a Coke. I mean red, you know. It can be a Coke as well, yeah. For some people who like apple, it's an apple. For people who like Coke, it's a Coke. Or another thing. So it's pretty tricky, you know. You have to be extremely aware of what is going on to see how it is working. I mean, we are fooled by the fastness of occurring. Everything is already built up, you know, until we realize it is built up, and then we think this what we see at that time, you know, is some solid block, but we haven't seen, you know, how this is working together. You wanted to ask something?
Ajahn, mental object, should I classify under Sanya?
Huh?
Mental object. That means an image or a person, a face of person that arises. It should be under Sanya, right? Not consciousness.
Yes, yes, Sanya. I mean, consciousness is something that is very difficult to catch.
Very hard, really hard. Because wherever I do, normally I can catch Sanya. That means the mental object.
Yes.
And then thereafter, Vedana Sankara, very fast at zoom. I can't even see which kind of person. Zoom.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the sanya that you catch is already a is already, you know, a big snowball.
Yeah.
Mixed up, you know, of all these things. I mean, they grow. You know, they work like a machinery. I mean, the first thought, you know, with it associated is a feel. And with it comes a memory that increases this feeling. And until we realize a lot of body, I mean a lot of these four groups have come into contact and built up this thing. So our way of investigation is to roll it back, you know, to the origin of it. I mean there's a feeling. And then nothing is created. The feeling arises and ceases. Then there's a memory. Memory arises and ceases, but doesn't grab hold of the next thing. And the grabbing hold of the next thing is that what builds up the illusion, you know, that these things really exist. A tree really exists, you know, because we grab hold of the tree. But that has been already quite a lot of things going on before we can see the tree. I mean, so we have to get at the same speed of that our mind is working. And that is quite a task. I mean, you have to see every command that is going to be processed. Huh?
So actually there is no tree or what?
A member of whatever there is. Huh? Other people, you know, for people, you know, who have never seen a tree, you know, they don't know what it is. I mean, it's just like, you know, describing 800 years ago, describing an elephant to a Western person. I mean, he doesn't even know what, he doesn't even understand what an elephant is. But if you would say a bear, you know, he would immediately understand you. Because there used to be a lot of bears, eh? In Europe, huh? I mean, the pictures have helped us, you know, to understand about all these different things that happen in our world. I mean, if there wouldn't be pictures or there would be drawings, you know, for most of the people of our country, they wouldn't even know what an elephant is like. And with the motion pictures, you know, it comes into motion, you know, we build an idea about what an elephant is. What is an elephant? It's a piece of, you know, it's a piece of flesh and bones. Mm-hmm. And the tree is the same thing, you know, if you wouldn't have use of a tree, you know, a tree would be, you know, just, yeah. But you can make so many uses of trees, so that's why a tree becomes so important in our life. All these things become important because of our memory, you know, that associate a lot of things with these things. I mean, if you didn't know what food is, you know, if you would be, you know, blindfolded, you know, somebody feeds you and you wouldn't even know what food is, you know, you would see it food, you know, and you wouldn't have any feelings about it. I mean, it all comes from memory, huh? From seeing, from tasting, from hearing, from touching, all these senses, huh? Are getting involved, you know, to create some things, you know, that aren't there, that, you know, in this kind of reality. I mean, the reality we live in is our reality, huh? And we know when it clashes with the reality of another person, then we hit each other. We fight each other. Because the other person's reality is not our reality. I mean, just like going through history of our world, you know, shows so many examples of this kind. I mean, the Aztecs, you know, didn't have any value for gold. You know, they found it nicer. The moment the Spanish people came, you know, they were greedy for this gold. They killed for that. But for the Aztec, it didn't have any value. They found it nicer. Yeah, we give the value to the things and then we are judging ourselves against these own values. And that's why we're constantly into problems. And the Christian thinks, you know, when a person dies, you know, he dies for real. So they feel very sorry. Buddhist, you know, a true Buddhist, you know, he feels, ah, oh, he's just gone, passed by into another realm, no? You feel sorry if he knows he passed to the high, but there. I mean, whatever we believe, that is what we are bound to, or bound by. That's our own limitation. And we are the ones who set the limitations, not somebody else. We.
The Kilesas.
Well, that's what we are. Mm-hmm. We are the Kilesas. The Kilesas are us.
Yeah.
And that is where all the difficulties, yeah, you know, start.
Yeah.
And there's where all the difficulties end. I mean, the Lord Buddha said, you know, it's easier, you know, to fight as a single person, a whole army, than to fight oneself. I mean, it's so easy, you see, you know, right. People go into war, you know, they fight, you know, even if they're outnumbered, they still fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they see their enemies.
Mm-hmm.
But we, in our fight of practice, we don't see the enemies, because the enemy is us. So who do we fight? How can we fight ourselves?
Yeah.
It is impossible. That's why the Lord Buddha devised us a very, very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
How to get closer and closer and closer. How to undermine the power of the kilesas.
Mm-hmm.
How to undermine the power of self.
Mm-hmm.
Until there's really hardly anything. And then we can take the last step. So from the first step of our practice, you know, to the last step, you know, we are cutting off our self-views and opinions. And the moment you come to a view or opinion you don't want to touch, I mean, that's where you stop at the point. There's no way that you can be on. And that's why it's so difficult, extremely for Westerners it's so difficult. The moment it really gets to, you know, gets tough, I mean, the Westerners give up. They're likely to give up. Then they don't trust their teacher anymore. Oh, he doesn't know. I have to leave him. I have to find another teacher. Until they come to the next point. And then they find another teacher and another teacher. And in the end, you know, they'll never progress. Because if they find really a good teacher, you know, they always point him down to the same thing. And he's not willing to do that. He doesn't even know it that he's not willing to. Because he still lives in the illusion there must be a perfect teacher. But perfect, you know, is our sense of what is perfect, huh? What your sense of perfect is not his sense of perfect. I mean, do you really believe the world is as perfect as it is? I mean, none of you believe it. But it is perfect in itself. It's the perfect law of karma that is working and operating. And if you see it working and operating, you see how perfect it is. There is no flaw in it. But you can't see it. Because you still have your views and opinions how this world should go. There should be no killing, there should be no this, or there should be no that, or there should be plenty of this, or should be... I mean, that is... it's all made up, no? And that's where you constantly stumble over. Over your views and opinions. It's why the Lord Buddha placed a lot of emphasis about, you know, cutting down our views and opinions. And cutting down conceit. I mean, it's just like in university, you know. We study a few years and we become smarter than our prof, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, what does he know, you know? I mean, he has 50 years of experience and we just flow. But we think, you know, because it's, especially when we are new, we think we are cleverer, don't we? We always think we are cleverer than the others. Of course our kilesas are cleverer.
But there are good sides of the kilesas, maybe.
Of course, yes. We can use. You know, we have to use it.
Okay, so that's we have to use the good sides and to destroy the bad sides.
Yes, that
but
is
not
the
to
first
destroy
thing.
All.
You can't even if you want, you can't destroy it.
So I have to destroy me, the whole me. So.
Well, that is the thing, but you can't even destroy it because that is just another view and opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's anilism. Mm-hmm. And here, well, how do you pronounce it correctly? Anilism? You don't believe in nothing? That's still a belief. I mean, it's also a belief. You can believe in God, you know, that's a belief. You can believe in that there's nothing, you know, it's also a belief. It has nothing to do with reality. Neither God exists, nor nothing exists. It's something beyond description that exists. Something that we cannot experience at the present state of our mind.
But to understand it right, we have to use the good sides of the kilesas to fight against the bad things.
That is the first thing, yeah?
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we have to overcome the bad things.
Yeah? Okay.
And to foster the good things. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, we can use the cleverness of the kilesas to undermine the kilesas.
Mm-hmm.
Until they get hold of that, and then we have to use another method.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they get smarter. The moment we get smarter, they get smarter.
Yeah.
That's a catch-22.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the beginning, it works for a while, you know, but in the end, it just works for half a minute until they get hold of it, you know, and use it against us. So the idea is, you know, to keep in line with the practice, in line with the path. And that is the only thing that can hold us in the end. I mean, if we know we have to do investigation, then let's do our investigation. If we have to know we do samadhi, then let's do samadhi. And that is pretty simple. If you're out in the world, you know, then we know we have to keep the five precepts and nothing is allowed against the five precepts. And we do our samadhi, we do our investigation as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the thing that holds us, the path. Until the path is really, until we can see the path within our own hearts, then we don't have to remember it. But until we can't remember it, you know, we have to bring it up again. And that's why we have to do reflection every day. I mean, was I on my path when I did this? Was I on my path when I said this? Now, first of all, remember what I said. I mean, that is a difficult thing. We don't want to remember the bad things that we did. We only want to remember the happy things. Isn't it? I mean, when you look at the day, you only want to remember the nice things. You don't want to remember the bad things, huh? If you don't want to remember the bad things, then you take half of your life away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only half of them, most of the time it's 90% of your life. Because the few moments that you're happy during the day, it's too little.
We've been talking about two kilesas, the attraction and aversion. What about the third one?
The delusion,
yes. What about that one?
That army is behind greed and hate. I mean, you can see them as armies.
Uh-huh.
I mean, greed and hate are the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
But they're actually by the army in behind, by the delusion.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you cannot get rid of the first two armies that attack you at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you will not see the third army. Once you get rid of greed and hate, then you will see delusion.
Mm-hmm.
And delusion is pretty difficult to
destroy.
Yes. Delusion is a major. I mean, it makes us greedy and it makes us hateful.
Mm-hmm.
And only once greed and hate, you know, it cannot make us greedy and hateful anymore, then we see delusion working at its speed. And it's amazing. It is really utterly amazing. And you don't catch it. Because you don't know how it's working.
But
it takes a time, you know, to see it working.
When you destroy it, you are enlightened, or?
No, then there is still avijja left. I mean, that's the master.
Okay.
I mean, every army has to have a general that is in charge. And avijja is the general in charge of three armies. Greed, hatred and delusion. Once greed and hatred are gone, you know, the general has only one army. Well, he uses it as full force. And once the illusion is gone, then there's still the general is there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a master of trickery. So, but you know, he has no power anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He has no power as long, you know, a general without his armies,
yeah.
You know, he has no power, but he still is there. Until you cannot remove him, or you can't see, if you can't see him, you know, then you're still under his surveillance. So you have to find him, you know, get rid of him. Or dismantle him. So, okay?
Thank you.
I mean, people, especially in the West, you know, when they start investigation, they want always to investigate, you know, the things that are easy to investigate. That's the mind canvas. They want to, you know, find out what is delusion. Because greed and hate are much more difficult. But you can't see behind these two, you can't see delusion, really. I mean, in its real form, unless greed and hate are removed. But it's much easier to work with our mind because we are trained from our, you know, from our fourth year to use our mind. Okay, and that's what we are going to use. And of course we don't want to see unpleasant things like this filthy body. So we skip this process, you know, and get rid of delusion and everything. We think, you know, greed and hate will collapse, huh? But it's just, you know, it's just, how do you call it? Storm in a teacup. It's not working. I mean, we have to train ourselves, and that is what you do when you say you develop good. You do not follow your greed and you do not follow your hate.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a long way. Huh?
Yeah.
Each time you see there's greed, you know, you don't follow it. Each time you see hate, you know, don't follow it. Until it really, it goes down. It will go down, you know, just like everything. Just like our notion of self, you know, each time we cut, you know, one of the leaves that makes the trees, or one of the, you know, one of the stems that makes a crop, you know, it will cut down, until, you know, it becomes so easy, you know, to cut it down with one slash, and then it's removed. But it's not easy. It's not easy in one cut. Huh?
Mm.
I mean, we have to do the work. We don't know when we started. You know, many lifetimes ago. You know, then it's easier for us. If we just started this lifetime, it's very difficult for us.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to cut down the tree. You know, and it's a huge tree. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Think of it as, you know, as a whole area of Udon. I mean, not only the city of Udon, but the whole province of Udon. It's as big as this. So we have to cut each day, we have to cut out, you know, until it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. I mean, that's all what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can let grow it bigger and bigger until it becomes whole Thailand and the whole world. It grows automatically, you know, we don't have to do it to let it grow.
But then we have to know what is greed. When is greed coming?
Anytime.
Yep.
I want this.
I want the ice cream. Is it
yeah.
greed?
Of course it is greed. Why do you want? I have to ask yourself, why do I want ice cream? What does it bring? A pleasant sensation.
Yeah.
That's it. So you want some pleasantness in your life. I mean, you want a pleasant feeling. And you know, ice cream, you know, not for everybody ice cream is a pleasant feeling.
Yeah.
But for you, ice cream is a pleasant feeling. That's why you want ice cream.
Okay.
You want a pleasant feeling. So that means, actually, at the moment, I'm not happy. That's why I want the ice cream. So your solution to unhappiness resides in your heart, is getting something, you know, through your senses that seems to you pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great.
And what can I do now?
You just stay with the unpleasant feeling, see it. Okay, unpleasant feeling arises and has to cease.
Mm-hmm.
And it automatically changes in a pleasant feeling. Okay, so I just wait.
Okay, don't buy that ice cream.
Yeah. I mean, this is just such a little thing, you know, but how difficult it is, you know.
That's right.
I want to call. It's also great. I mean, why do you want to call? I want to talk to this person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of the time it's not necessary. You know, if there's something to regulate or to talk about, you know, because, I mean, yeah, if you sit together and eat, you know, please hand me over the salt. You know, that's okay. But I want to call. I want to write. You know, I want to receive a phone. I want to check my account. It's all forms of greed.
Watch TV, same.
Yes, I mean, that is the biggest, you know. I just don't want to know. That just doesn't translate. I just don't want to know what is going on inside my heart. That's why I watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's why I listen to music. I just don't want to know. And that is what actually, you know, translates as avijja. I don't want to know. I don't want to understand. The reality of life.
Mm.
The reality of this body. The reality of the five khandhas. I mean, by thinking you don't get over. I mean, just by doing. Okay, Buddha, and Buddha, and Buddha. Or investigation. Okay, bring inner up, no? Bring inner up. Until you learn to deal with difficult situations, until you see bad feelings arise and bad feelings pass. I mean, you have to have the experience that bad feelings arise and pass. Just by doing nothing.
Yeah.
That's what you have to experience, that's what you don't believe. Because we all believe, you know, we can get rid of our bad experience by just replacing with a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't work.
I was at home, going through a batch of unpleasant feelings, and just thought, oh, there it is. And, I don't know, Sukha rises a siao mad.
Hmm?
Come, an unpleasant feeling. Then I was just doing my thing, and then I was just watching, and then I didn't see the dying off of the unpleasant feeling, but I see the rising of the pleasant. Crazy. You guys, madness, you know.
Yeah, but that is how it is, yeah?
It just...
Yeah, I mean, it just switches, you know, if we would follow, we see, we see actually the switching part. I mean, that's how unaware we are of things, huh?
Yeah, it just triggers itself.
You just don't see it. And because that's why we are called blind or deluded. Because we just don't see reality. Our things constantly change.
But you're very right, you know, when sukhas arise, I mean, pleasant feelings arises,
mm-hmm.
zoom, very fast,
mm-hmm.
we go think, mm-hmm. how can we repeat this thing, da-da-da-da.
Yes,
then when Ailama, I got caught again. But very few time could... stop.
Yes, because it's difficult, you know, with pleasant feeling to, you know, to get detached. Unpleasant feelings is very easy to get detached. So we learn it with the easiest thing.
Mm.
Because we can learn it from the more difficult.
So it's so automatic, so habitual.
Of course, everything is automatic, everything is habitual. And that's what we that's why, where our effort of practicing, being aware of every moment, every moment, every moment, every moment. Just being aware. What is happening right now? What is happening now? Feeling. Or memory. Or thought. Or this. Or that. Or that. Huh? Or body. And in body, we can split up in the six senses. Okay. It's fine. Sight, touch, hear. Smell, taste, thinking. I mean, it's not easy, it's not difficult. We cannot fight the whole thing by our ideas or just getting a new belief system. We have to fight it in another way. We have to dismantle it. I mean, we have to take the car and put it in piece and pieces, bits and pieces, until there is no car anymore. The Lord Buddha used to, you know, he said, carp, yeah? Once you put a card into its bits and pieces, where is the car? There's no car. I mean, there's a piece of wood. There's some nuts and bolts, you know, but there's no car. There's only a car when you assemble it in the right form. Mm-hmm. And there's a house when you assemble it in the right form. But all what it is, you know, the basic building blocks are everywhere. So that is our way of practice, you know, to disassemble it. I mean, to assemble it, you know, it's a way of the computer. So, it's late. We meet together on Sunday, yeah?